Well, hello everyone. That was an old Stephen Foster song called Ring the Banjo from 1851. And my name is Ethan Uslan, and it's 2018, and you're listening to the one and only Carolina Shout podcast, where I play old-timey songs upon the piano, and I talk about those old-timey songs. And today we're going to play some 50s music. Of course, I mean 1850s music, because it was during that era when America fell in love with an instrument of African-American origin, the banjo. And today we're going to celebrate the banjo. Unfortunately, I don't play the banjo. But fortunately, there's piano music out there that imitates the banjo, written for situations just like this, when you want to get your banjo fixed, but all you have is a piano player. This is as close as we can get to banjo music over here, and we're going to do the best we can with what we have. So before we get to the music, let's talk a little bit about the banjo. Prior to around 1830 or so, the banjo was exclusively an instrument played by African Americans, and it is believed to have evolved from a similar West African instrument called the kora. But then a familiar American story plays out. White people discover the joys of banjo music and turn an exclusively African American art into a national sensation. The first American banjo star, the Elvis of the banjo, was a white man named Joel Walker Sweeney, who claimed to have learned how to play the banjo from a slave in Virginia. He was tremendously successful, touring with minstrel shows all over the United States, as well as the UK and Ireland. By the 1850s, banjos were all over the United States, like iPhones are today. People were playing them in the plantations, in the cities, everywhere. And in terms of popularity, the banjo was giving the piano a run for its money. Starting in the 1850s, you start seeing some publications for piano that were meant to imitate the banjo. Do you love banjo music but only have a piano player in your family? No problem. Looking at some online databases of old sheet music, I found about a half dozen of these kind of piano banjo pieces. The most famous one is by Louis Moreau Gottschalk, and I'll get to his banjo piece. First, here's a lesser-known effort by an obscure composer of whom I have absolutely no biographical information. All I know about H.C. Harris is that he composed a little something in 1857 entitled The Banjo, an imitation of this inimitable instrument. I think that's an oxymoron. Can you imitate something inimitable? You be the judge. Here it is. So that was H.C. Harris's The Banjo, an imitation of this inimitable instrument. And I would say that it sounded very banjo-y, and that he succeeded in imitating the inimitable. Gives you insight into what banjo music must have sounded like in 1857, when banjo music was all the rage. And now I'd like to play the most famous banjo piano composition ever written. It's called The Banjo, An American Sketch by Louis Moreau Gottschalk. And it's very famous, so you might know it a little bit already, and you might know a little bit about Gottschalk. So if you do, please forgive me while I give a little bit of biographical info on Louis Moreau Gottschalk for those Gottschalk newbies listening. Louis Moreau Gottschalk was born in New Orleans in 1829. His father was a Jewish businessman from London, and his mother was a Catholic white Creole from what is now known as Haiti. So Louis grew up in New Orleans, speaking both French and English, and he was exposed to lots of classical music as well as Creole folk music. He was one of those child prodigies, and at the age of 13, his folks shipped him off to Paris to study at the Paris Conservatory. After he graduated, he gave a few concerts in Paris, and for one of them, he played a Chopin piano concerto, and Chopin himself was in attendance. Chopin himself! And you thought your teenage piano recitals were high pressure. Well, Chopin loved Gottschalk and predicted that he would one day become the king of pianists. And after that, Gottschalk went on a tour of Switzerland and then Spain, and then he sailed back to America. And he lived the rest of his life traveling, living out of a suitcase, giving concerts from town to town, city to city. He went all over the United States and also Cuba, Puerto Rico, and Brazil. His career had ups and downs, and during the ups, he achieved a great deal of fame and gave a concert for Abraham Lincoln. Gottschalk eventually died in 1869 in the middle of a concert he was giving in Rio de Janeiro. He collapsed in the middle of a piece that he composed that was entitled Death, which I think he interpreted a little bit too literally, if you ask me. Anyway, most of his music was very much in the European vein, and many of his compositions combined Creole, Cuban, or Puerto Rican or African-American folk music with classical music, which nobody had really done before. And one of his most beloved pieces is the American-inspired The Banjo. And I'm going to play that for you right now. Here it is, The Banjo by Louis Moreau Gottschalk from 1853. Thank you. So that was The Banjo by Louis Moreau Gottschalk. That was the Beethoven's fifth of banjo piano compositions. I hope you liked it. We have some more time left, so I thought I'd talk about this piece a little bit more. In fact, I'd like to wax poetic. I have a poem here by the Pulitzer Prize winning poet Gwendolyn Brooks. She wrote a 1988 poem entitled Gottschalk and the Grand Tarantelle. It's very relevant, very powerful poem. Gwendolyn Brooks had some words for Gottschalk, and they were not flattering. Brace yourself, fellow Gottschalk fans. Here's the poem. My black brothers and sisters, nimble slaves in New Orleans, dancing to your own music, loving your wild art, your art, vertical, winnowy, willful. You did not know that Gottschalk was watching, was hearing. Slouched in the offing he was, crouching most shamefully he was, stealthy, heavy breathing. He fell in love with your music. Died at 40, but before that he created Le Banjo, an American sketch. He created piano pieces based on tunes he heard in the Congo. Early he stole the wealth of your art, wrongfully. He bore it away to the white side of town, you never knowing, and there he doctored the dear purity. He whitened your art and named it his own. He traded it for money in great halls of whiteness. He sold it to thronging white company. The patrons went mad, loving odd music, embroidered savagery. Women wept and wilted. They cut off and wore his hair. He became the lapel piece composer. His concerts and conquests multiplied. He handled many a money, and he died at 40, an over-musicked man. He rose across you, black beauties. He stole your art. He never passed you a penny, nor painted your name on a page. But hark! He inherited slaves from his father and freed them. All hail the debt payer. Ouch! This poem's a bitter pill for us Gottschalk fans. I have to admit, Gwendolyn Brooks points to something that we should all recognize. African Americans at that time were completely musically exploited. White people were taking black music, stealing it, performing it, making lots of money from it, and they owed a debt and they did not pay it. Gwendolyn Brooks describes Gottschalk as stealthily crouching in the background in Congo Square in New Orleans, a famous spot where slaves were known to have held musical events. Brooks suggests that Gottschalk was there listening to slave music and taking mental notes. This is a powerful image, but we don't know if Gottschalk conceived the piece in this manner. He probably heard hundreds of hours of banjo music over the course of his life. He heard black banjo players, he heard white banjo players, and his piano piece may have been a kind of a combination of banjo licks and tunes he had heard over the years, with some musical ideas that he made up himself added into the mix. We simply don't know the details. But Gwendolyn Brooks is a poet, not a historian, and whether she gets the details right about Gottschalk's creative process, well, that's not the point. The point she's making was that white people were stealing black people's music and making money off of it. Was Gottschalk guilty of this? To a degree he was, I'm sure. But I think that if we're going to talk about ripping off black musicians and not paying an owed debt, Gottschalk is not who I think about. The person who leaps clear and center into my mind is Joel Walker Sweeney. Joel Sweeney, who I mentioned briefly earlier, was white and was the first great banjo star. Unlike Gottschalk, whose musical education was mostly at the Paris Conservatory, Sweeney learned to play the banjo from local slaves in Virginia. This was his musical education. And once he learned to play the slave's instrument, he went on to enjoy great fame and success as a banjo-playing minstrel star. And how did Joel Sweeney repay his debt to the black musicians who taught him to play their instrument? Well, he put on blackface and sang songs mocking black people. And thousands of white people forked over money to see his show so they could clap along and laugh at the white people acting like black fools. All the while, Joel Sweeney played not upon the piano, not upon the guitar, but upon the banjo, an instrument invented by the very people he was mocking. Mm.
All right, Kate, roll the credits.
You have been listening to the Carolina Shout podcast. Ethan Uslan, who is me, plays the piano, and Kate Uslan, who is my wife, strums on the computer to get things recorded and uploaded to the internet so you can listen to it. Thanks to the Lester S. Levy Sheet Music Collection at Johns Hopkins University. All the music you heard me play today, I got the original sheet music from the Lester S. Levy Sheet Music Collection's online database. It's awesome. I searched the word banjo, got all sorts of old-timey sheet music about the banjo, I downloaded the ones that looked interesting, I printed them out, and played them for your enjoyment. Thanks to Gwendolyn Brooks for her poem, Gottschalk and the Grand Tarantelle. I know Gwendolyn Brooks isn't around anymore, but I hope she wouldn't mind that I defended Gottschalk a little bit. He wasn't perfect, but it's my duty to defend him. It's called Piano Code. Piano players defend other piano players. That's why I'm not going to let you talk trash about Harry Truman. He played piano. Condoleezza Rice, piano player. Don't say anything negative about her. And Richard Nixon played the piano. So keep it to yourself if you have something negative to say about Richard Nixon. And Clint Eastwood, if you have something bad to say about bridges over Madison County, come over here to the Carolina Shout podcast studio and say it to my face. I dare you. Go ahead, make my day. All right, we're getting off topic here. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to leave a rating and review on iTunes and tell all your friends about this podcast so they're in the know.